School districts around the state are evaluating whether it's time to resume in-person instruction. Many schools suspended in-person classes for the fall semester to help minimize the spread of COVID-19. Others have opted for a combo of in-person and virtual learning, some continued meeting in person. With research showing that children are less likely to get COVID, districts are considering reopening their doors. Just recently, the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said in-person classes should be the goal and said with vaccinations ramping up, next fall could look something close to normal at schools and college campuses. Chippewa Falls Elementary Schools plan to reopen starting January 4th. Middle and high schools there will remain virtual through the 21st. In Appleton, the youngest students will go back 5 days a week on January 19th. Older students will return with a hybrid approach. Madison schools say they'll make a decision by January 8th. Just a few of the decisions out there right now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is it time to return to in-person learning? Are you still nervous about COVID? How confident are you that schools can make learning safe? Are you worried about your kids being behind because they weren't physically at school? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alan Borsuk is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School and an education columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Alan, good to have you back with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, there's obviously arguments on both sides. First, can you talk about what we know so far about the impact of virtual learning on the kids who are learning online, not in schools?
Well, I think the big picture is there aren't any good choices here, and nothing is slam dunk better than the other, than anything else. So the virtual learning, I'm not aware of any Wisconsin results, but there's been an increasing amount of data coming in from around the country and even from overseas that suggests that overall reading isn't as bad as far as learning loss as was feared, but math, there's some pretty substantial learning loss. And more troubling, I would say, that the kids who were better off in the first place, including economically, are the ones who are getting the least penalty of being in such disruptive circumstances. And then the ones who most need to make progress, the ones with the most trouble reading and math and other basic skills, are the ones who are most likely to be losing grounds here. So it's not a pretty picture.
And then on the other hand, talk about the downsides of staying open, reopening, or, bouncing back and forth.
Well, the plus on the virtual side, of course, is that it much minimizes the chances of spread of COVID, which is the reverse for in-person schools. That almost every school that I know of has had some incidence of cases among kids, among teachers, among families, the parents and such, that have caused quarantining. A lot of schools have had disruptions of closing for a day or a week or 2 weeks or closing certain classes. Every day is a new adventure, and it's highly stressful for everyone involved, especially the leaders of the schools. You know, what are we doing tomorrow? Sometime minute to minute, you'll get something and say, oh, man, well, that's the end of this peaceful day. So it's been highly stressful. Teachers are stressed. Kids are stressed. Parents are stressed. That said, it's been actually working, it seems, fairly well as far as being able to conduct classes in the places where it's been 5 days a week particularly.
And we've seen a lot of research suggesting that kids, I think, clearly less vulnerable to COVID-19, especially the younger kids. But their kids aren't the only ones in schools. There's been concern about staff, teachers, and especially the substitute teacher, heavily represented by older demographics. What are some of the concerns about staffing and vulnerability?
Well, I think, and I don't want to pose at all as someone who's knowledgeable on medical and scientific stuff, but there's still so much that's not known about how the virus spreads and who can catch it. And sometimes you have cases where two people were very close together physically and one of them didn't catch it, and other times an entire class will catch it. So that uncertainty of who's going to catch it, yes, the incidence among older people, and that can be anyone from above 20, especially above 40, and even more especially above 60, is a bigger deal than among young kids. I believe it's still accurate that there are no known deaths in Wisconsin among people who are under 20, although it's been a contributing factor in, I think, at least one case that I know of. So kids can spread it to people in a low-income community when we have lots of this in Milwaukee. There are many multi-generational homes where you've got grandparents and parents and kids and the worries about spread. You've got dense populations and the worries about spread. So nobody's immune to worrying.
Talking to Alan Borsuk. He's an education columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, talking about the tough decisions facing schools of how, when, whether to open for in-person instruction versus virtual or some combination. You can share your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know what you want to see happen, what you are seeing maybe in your own district, where your kids go to school, where you work yourself. You can join in on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Alan, in a recent column, you say that the approach from schools is divided in a lot of ways on partisan lines around the state. What are we seeing?
Well, I want to say clearly that whether this is just an observation or a causative thing is highly debatable.
Sure.
But yeah, the more urban districts, the lower income districts, and the districts with higher numbers of minority kids are much more likely to be virtual and have been virtual since March 13th when schools closed. Rural areas, smaller cities, very likely to be 5 days a week at least, 5 days a week, or at least these hybrid schedules of 2 or 3 days a week. And it lines up very much along the political dividing lines we know so well in Wisconsin, Republicans and Democrats, Trump voters and Biden voters, rich and poor, and race. It's just you can't look at the maps of these things and not see so many ways of dividing Wisconsin, as many ways we are divided.
You wrote another piece about the Milwaukee School District and their approach to reopening, and you write that, in effect, they're kind of slow walking the decision-making process. What do you see in there?
Well, I use that term. They met in October, late October, and the administration, Superintendent Keith Posley, proposed making preparations to open at least for young kids in the second half of January, and whether they would go ahead with that would be determined by the circumstances then. And the school board didn't give that the time of day, frankly, even though the city health commissioner, who was part of the meeting, said it could be open safely. There's several dozen private schools in the city of Milwaukee that are open in person and within the kind of stresses and such that I said before have been making it through the year. And they put off even discussing it until late January. And the prospects for reopening in Milwaukee, in the Milwaukee public schools this year, I wouldn't want to make a bet on there being in-person classes between now and June. I'm guessing that there won't be. And that compares to even a lot of the big urban places in the country, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, others, where they are at least really pushing to get open and bring in at least the youngest kids, kindergartner, first, second, third, fourth grades, and special ed kids, and in some cases, kids with English language learning needs. Those are the priorities for bringing kids back. But here, and I should add, public opinion is highly divided statewide. In Milwaukee, I bet it's still a large majority of people, parents who don't want to send their kids in person. There's still a lot of fear, a lot of concern, and a lot of cases.
We're talking about the decision by some Wisconsin school districts to reopen their doors in the near future, or at least in process of trying to make that decision. Alan Borsuk is our guest, senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, education columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support resuming in-person instruction? Are you worried about sending kids back to school and sending the grown-ups who work in schools back to those schools? What do you want to see happen maybe before your local district brings kids back in person? Or have you been in person in your part of the state all along? Parents, teachers, students, staff, Tell us how you feel. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about whether it's time for school districts around Wisconsin to resume in-person classes or continue them, as some are. Public health officials in Dane County says it can be done safely. Chippewa Falls reopening January 4th. Others making their decisions, partial or total reopening. Alan Borsick stays with us, senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, education columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can give your answer to some of those questions facing school district leaders. 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen in your local district? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller now. Dave is with us in Sussex. Dave, hello.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Dave?
Well, I think that, of course, this is my opinion. Everybody has one. I think that since the beginning of the COVID-19, the severity has been blown out of proportion, although it's dangerous for a very, 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 very small percentage of the population. The majority of the people are asymptomatic or not affected by it whatsoever, especially the kids. It's time to get the kids back to school. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And the severity is not as bad as people are making it out to be.
Dave, thanks for the call. And that's an argument we hear, I think, especially about schools and younger kids. On the other hand, 300,000 dead, and we're walking away from that number in the United States. How do you see districts weighing the severity, as Dave was talking about, and the risks they face in the schools?
Well, I don't know of anywhere in the country, even in the areas that have been most inclined to open schools, where they're not taking a case where, when a positive test comes back for a student or a teacher, where they're not taking that really seriously and quarantining kids. I think the mainstream health verdict and the mainstream verdict that schools are following is to take it really seriously when there is a positive case. I really don't have any numbers, that there's a trend toward trying to reopen once things get back after the holidays. Some of the big cities, more bipartisan support for that. Joe Biden says he wants schools to reopen if it can be done safely. Dr. Fauci says it can be done safely. A lot of state officials around the country and local health departments are saying it can be done safely, but it requires observing all of the rules we know so well now, masks and distancing, in the case of schools, ventilation and that kind of stuff, which makes, by the way, that's one of the reasons I think that there's some difference in geography here, is that suburban and rural districts, not every one, but many of them have more spacious buildings, newer buildings, just bigger classrooms, urban districts, and Milwaukee certainly one of them has a lot of buildings that are 100 years old, 80, 85, 90 years old, and they're just not built the same way for spacing out students for social distancing in a classroom. So it is harder in a place like Milwaukee than it would be in, frankly, Sussex. So everyone has their own take on how to proceed here.
Thanks for the call, Dave. We heard from Brandy on Facebook, who writes, has everyone gotten access to the vaccine? No, then it's too early. So the vaccine, being, on the horizon, maybe for wider use in the public, do you see school districts, Alan, looking at that and saying, okay, we just got to get through until we get teachers and staff vaccinated and then we can reopen?
I don't know about the then we can reopen, but I think everyone's looking to the point where at least teachers have been vaccinated, and they're in not the very top priority group, but in kind of the second group, teachers and first responders and such. So teachers are likely to have some availability of it. I don't know how widespread it'll be relatively soon, but what does relatively soon mean? February? The notion that everyone, students and teachers, as well as family members, are going to be vaccinated before the end of the school year seems pretty unlikely. We're talking, things I've been reading, more like May and June before there's really widespread vaccination.
Let's go back to a caller now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hello. I was wondering if there's been any correlation between school districts that are in school teaching and the number of fatalities from COVID per capita, if there's anything that's been done. And I have to disagree a little bit with the thought that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. I don't want my elderly parents to be collateral damage simply, you know, for the lack of a few months of additional at-home schooling where the kids can keep separated and not be little, to use a peanuts term, pig pens running around spreading COVID everywhere. So in the spirit of the Christmas Snoopy and Charlie Brown, that just kind of comes to mind. But
gotcha. Thanks for the call, Mike. So as far as studies, I know, Alan, I've seen people trying to figure out if there's a correlation between schools opening and local COVID levels. I know people are watching Houston, for example, closely. I don't know if we have anything definitive on that yet, though. What are you looking at, if anything?
Well, nothing definitive, and there seems to be a lot of evidence that's not conclusive yet that spread within schools is not too common, particularly among kids. But spread outside of schools and then kids, you know, spreading it to each other, either in school or out, is pretty common. And, you know, every county in Wisconsin has had high to very high rates. I have some friends in Vilas County who thought they were in a safe place. And I said, you know, your per capita rate, this is several weeks ago, your per capita rate is only slightly below Milwaukee County, which was a factual statement at the time. So there are, I don't think there are very many havens, except staying home all the time, you know, which that's a personal choice and not a policy choice.
Thanks for that call. Talking to Alan Borsuk, education columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at school opening and reopening and in-person instruction decisions. Let's go to another caller now. Jan is with us in La Crosse. Jan, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have some comments about reopening the schools. I'm a retired teacher who's been substituting, and I've actually been subbing every single day since September 1st. Right now, I'm at a school, and we just had two teachers last week whose parents died, and they could not find subs for either one of them. So I'm subbing for one teacher, but I ended up subbing for both teachers at the same time, and they had to call the school nurse to go sub for the other teacher. So what are they going to do if they open up the schools and people don't have the vaccine or the vaccination yet and they're not going to come in? And I've told them if they go in person, I'm not coming in until I've had the vaccine.
And Jan, just to be clear, you were subbing in virtual school.
Yes, I was subbing in virtual school.
Gotcha. So thanks for that call, Jan. Alan, how big is that a concern? Is that substitutes, for example, like Jan, retired teachers who virtual, they can do it? Jan says in person, not till I'm vaccinated.
Well, a lot of substitutes, a lot of districts draw on a pool of substitutes that is, as you said at the start of the program, disproportionately retired teachers, and that means they're not, you know, so young, and they're a higher risk population. So that's a legitimate issue. I made a round of calls several weeks ago to some Milwaukee suburban superintendents just to hear how they were doing. And the level of stress they were having just keeping teachers in classrooms, just keeping every classroom staffed, was really high. And this was in some cases in quite well-to-do districts. This wasn't just a low-income district thing. This was just, you know, a lot of teachers have been sick. A lot of teachers have been quarantining. It's just so stressful for all these people involved in the schools.
Thanks for sharing your story, Jan. Time for one more caller. Louise is on the line in Wausau. Louise, hello.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Louise?
I wanted to tell you that our community has given parents a choice on whether they wanted to send their children in person or if they wanted to remain virtual. So our first quarter of school, their school was all virtual. And then for second quarter, parents had a choice. And so some of the students are remaining virtual and some are in person. And what we're finding with the kids that are in person, any COVID-related illnesses are occurring outside of the school setting. They are not occurring within school because we are practicing the six-foot distance. We're practicing the face masking and hand washing. And so when taking those precautions, we're finding we're not having a spread in school, but it's kids who have been exposed in the community, whether that's through sporting events, family gatherings, or things like that. And then other kids become exposed by being a close contact.
Louise, thanks for the call. Just a few moments left. Alan, maybe with partial reintroductions in the school, whether it's choice or just the younger kids or special needs students, schools can have some in person but allow for that space because they're not packing all the students in.
Well, two quick thoughts. One is there is a high priority pretty much everywhere, I think, on getting the youngest kids in because those are the ones who are hardest to reach in virtual teaching and most need to grow fast at this point. Second thought is every district, every private school, I think, that I know of has offered the option of virtual or in person. In some cases, they want you to choose one or the other and stick with it. But a large percentage of people have been choosing to keep their kids home. In some districts, it's 50, 60, 70%. In others, I know of one district in the Milwaukee area that has been as low as 15%. But in general, it's very high, especially in more urban districts.
We'll leave it there. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Alan Borsak is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School and an education columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We talked to him about how schools around the state are deciding whether to resume in-person classes or keep them going on.